All right, I think we're live. Ryan.
Yeah, I think we're live. How's
I think we're live. Yeah, I'm doing great. You?
Yeah, not bad.
So hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us this morning or evening or whatever time zone you're in. So I guess we're going to have some fun today, right?
Yeah, I think we're going to have fun with data. Whoever would have said that, right?
Well,
fun with data.
I say it.
I say it all the time, too. So yeah, without further ado, let's kind of kick in and get cracking.
So yeah, what are we going to talk about?
So I think, you know, just a bit of housekeeping and some kind of intro slides and that kind of stuff. But, you know, just a little bit about who we are. I'm Ryan Crocker, and you can reach me. That's my Twitter handle. If you ever want to kind of tweet at me or follow me, follow at your own peril, of course. But that's who I am. So I'm a program manager with the Azure Document DB team. And for the last 20 years or so, I've been working with data pretty much exclusively, right? And I've been a NoSQL guy since before it was cool. I've built, deployed, debugged lots and lots of stuff, so I'm not going to go into what I've done. But basically, I've had my head in the cloud since, you know, before 2009, before Azure kind of came out. And obviously, once Azure came out, I just then, you know, embarked and embraced Azure, and I've been working with that ever since. So, David.
Yeah, so I put down that... I've been at least 21 years. I just had to one-up you. this one goes to 21. Actually, a little bit more than that, but I don't want to admit that. So you mentioned when Azure came out, that was, what, right at the end of 2008? So yeah. The beginning of 2009, I started working with Azure full-time, joined Microsoft in 2010. I got booted out of the MVP program in 26 days, which I think was the shortest stint there. And I have spent the past several years working in the NoSQL space. Right. So data has been part of my career for a long time, but I really, really like the options that we have now.
Excellent. So, you know, I think today we're going to kind of spend some time and we're going to go over, you know, these modules. The title of the course is kind of interesting, and we'll get to why we called it what we did, you know, throughout the day. But basically, it's this concept of polyglot persistence and how do you go about choosing the right storage mix? And I think, you know, by going through these seven module or eight modules, by the end of the day, we'll have a really good idea, I hope, of what it is we're talking about. So, I think, you know, we'll spend a couple of minutes. We'll have a look at the data landscape. We'll have a look at then, you know, different kinds of databases. And then we'll wrap it up at the end of the day by kind of seeing how we can use all of these things together.
Yep. So as you're sitting here watching the course and wondering if this is the right material for you, do you have the right experience? The answer is yes. If you're thinking about building an app that stores and processes data, this is going to be a great overview for you. You know, if you've worked with Azure, great. If you haven't, we'll give you an idea of how you could run databases in Azure. The course itself is going to focus on what you can do in Azure. And then, so you might want to have a basic understanding, but even if you don't, we're not going to go too deep into the actual details of Azure. We'll stick with the data side.
And I think that's a fairly good premise for the whole day today. You know, we're going to introduce a lot of concepts and we're going to talk about a lot of things. So you may kind of get a bit overwhelmed about all the different stuff we're talking about. But none of it is a deep dive into the weeds. It's all just very high level introduction stuff. And this is going to be the first session in a whole series of stuff that we're going to follow up on this. And you know, at some point we're going to have a deep dive into every single one of the topics that we talk about. So today it's just literally about skimming the top and doing that introduction.
So, and if you're joining us today, you're part of the MVA community. So we have this whole virtual academy, which has lots and lots of online training. So I think we're up to like 2.6 million registered users. And you earn points for seeing the event. And there's a voucher that you can see with the code choose storage.
Cool. So really exciting. I think, you know, we've got some giveaways for today, which unfortunately, for live attendees only. And what we'll do is at the end of every module, we will ask a question. about something that we covered during the module, and you know, we'll give away one of these two books. Now, these two books are what started me down this kind of route of polyglot persistence. You know, I think this is where, you know, the subject for me kind of started, was with this NoSQL Distilled book by Martin Fowler and you know,
gives a great overview of all the different database types that we'll be talking about today.
And, you know, the 7 days databases in 7 weeks then goes into a little bit more detail in terms of every one of those kind of databases. So definitely stay tuned at the end of each module for that question. You'll see in the top right-hand corner of this current slide, you'll see that hashtag come up a couple of times during the session, during the course of today. That, if you want to reach out to us on Twitter or follow the conversation happening on Twitter, that's the hashtag that we recommend you guys use, so PolyglotMVA. David and I will be fielding questions at the end of every module, and we'll be following that hashtag. So please reach out to us, reach out to the questions kind of in the MVA stuff, and we'll be able to go from there.
Yep.
So let's kick in and take a look at this thing called the data landscape.
Sure. And we have a tight agenda to go through. We'll talk about just the sheer amount of data that we have, and data is everywhere, right? We'll take a look at the different types of data we have, and then we'll look at how to store data and options for processing data.
Okay, and I think, you know, the options for storing data and processing data are infinite, you know, and we're only going to focus today on how to store data and process data in Microsoft Azure. So we're not going to cover other clouds, we're not going to cover on-premises environments, we're only going to cover the different options for doing data in Azure. So, you know, if we start off with, you know, data, you know, there's a lot of it. It's everywhere around us. You know, everything we touch today has got some kind of piece of data to it. So, you know, it's worth kind of taking a look at some interesting kinds of quotes that I found about data while I was putting together the session. So George Leave, the CIO from Goldman Sachs, quoted that, you know, 90% of the world's data has been created in the last 2 years. So if you just kind of pause and think, that's a phenomenal kind of quote. I mean, if you think about all the data that we've got around us, 90% of that was created in the last 2 years. That's a staggering statistic. And then, you know, another one that I found which was really, really good was, you know, if you have a look at that, at all the information created, replicated, and consumed in a single year, you know, in 2010, that number was about 130 billion gigabytes. I don't even want to try and think how big 130 billion gigabytes is. I don't have, you know, I've got a fairly big NAS at home that has a lot of storage for all my photos and stuff, but 130 billion gig, that is a lot of data. Yep. You know, and if you take a look, that number has grown to 2.8 trillion gigabytes in 2012. So in just 2 years, we've gone from 130 billion to 2.8 trillion gigabytes. The IDC projects that by 2020, that number will have reached 40 trillion gigabytes. That is staggering.
And if you think about all the connected devices we have, I mean, we all have cell phones, we have these smart devices that we wear and connected vehicles. Yeah. Data is just...
So that's a good point. I mean, if you have a look, you know, the guys from Domo, really good site, by the way, but guys from Domo came up with this infographic. Now, if you want to take a look at some, you know, statistics on this infographic, you know, if you take a look over here, YouTube, this is data that's produced every minute of the day. There they say YouTube, every minute of the day, they get 48 hours of video has been uploaded every minute of every day. If you take a look, you know, there's some other really interesting statistics on this slide or on this infographic. One of the ones that I really found fascinating was, you know, Facebook users share 684,478 pieces of information every minute. That's mind-blowing. But wait, I found that infographic and thought those numbers were scary. And then I realized that this was an infographic from 2012. So I went back and I had a look, and turns out they've actually updated that slide. Now, if you take a look, you know, we've gone from 684,000 Facebook shares a minute to 2.4 million Facebook shares a minute. That's just mind-blowing. 72 hours of video content gets uploaded to YouTube every single minute of every single day. That just blows my mind.
Yep. Yeah, the increase is amazing.
It's this true hockey stick curve.
You know? It's not all my fault either.
It's not all your fault either. No, you're right. It's not all your fault. You know, we live in this world of big data. And that hockey stick that you saw before, you know, the acceleration of data growth is only going to get bigger. You know, we've got this thing called Internet of Things that's emerging now as the next kind of technology megatrend. And this is basically the concept of taking all these devices that we have. You were mentioning, you know, your smart band or your fridge or your toaster or your hairdryer or, you know, whatever the heck it is that you're using and connecting those to the internet. These things generate massive amounts of data. And the Internet of Things is about gathering all this data and then being able to reach out and do analysis on that data. I mean, we've got smart TVs, personal fitness trackers, you know, hot tubs, toasters, industrial applications. Yep. You know, while you were flying in to do the session from the other side of the country, you know, think about the fact that that jet airplane that you flew on, in that flight, that jet airplane alone produced about 1.5 terabytes of data on that flight.
Which is crazy. Again, not all my fault.
Yeah. But now think about how many flights are going on around the world at any one point in time.
Right.
You know, where flights are producing 5 terabytes of data, that gets goes back to Boeing or Airbus, and these guys then analyze that data and do rich data analysis on what that aircraft is doing.
So it's two pieces to that. One is telemetry data.
Yeah.
Right. So every flight has telemetry and GPS tracking and different information, but also the consumers on the flight.
Yeah.
So now they have in-flight Wi-Fi on every flight. So,
but I mean, you know, my home has got my fridge is connected to the internet. I've got light bulbs that are connected to the internet. I can, it's just nuts. You
know? And I think one point that you're making, there's two sides to this. One is the consumption of data where we have to track all of it. We have to read all this data in and then we have to do something with it and process it. So there's two sides to that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I think, you know, there's lots and lots of data around us all over the place. But data is not all the same. There's different kinds of data, you know. And, you know, when we're looking at data, David, what on earth are you doing?
It's just my glasses were a little loose. Do you have a hammer?
What do you want a hammer for?
Just, I'm trying to put this, you know, like if you have
But that's a tiny screw. What do you want a hammer for? Surely a screwdriver would be better.
I've used a hammer. I have a hammer at home, so I thought I would just use it here.
But there's different kinds of tools you should be using for this job.
Yeah, but I want a hammer.
Can you live with your glasses as they are? I think you should, because I don't think you should use a hammer on them. There's better tools.
Well, why not?
I don't know. Is there better tools? Anyway, back to the slides. Now that David has fixed these spectacles. But basically, not all data is equal. So why do we treat it the same? You know, same as why is David using a hammer to fix his spectacles when there could be a much better tool, like a little jeweler screwdriver to fix his spectacles. You know, and we've been doing this with data for a very long time. You know, we've been taking data and we've been treating it the same way. We've been taking whatever kinds of data we've got and we've been munging it together into a particular form and we've been querying it the same way, we've been writing it the same way. And, you know, now that we're getting this massive amounts of data, the velocity has increased, the variety of the data has increased. Why are we trying to treat data the same way?
And I think we get used to the tools that we're comfortable with.
Yeah.
So if we've used a particular type of database all these years, everything looks like it could fit within using that tool.
You know, when all you've got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, we totally get it. The nice thing is that, you know, we're going to show you, hopefully, that your toolbox as a data guy doesn't just have a hammer in it. It's got a whole lot more in it than just a hammer. So if we take a look, you know, data, it should come as no surprise that not all data looks the same. You get some structured data, you get some semi-structured data, you get some non-structured data. You know, data is not used in the same way either. You know, some data relates to other pieces of data, some data is queried, some data is self-contained, all sorts of different kinds of data. And that's what we're going to look at today. So, you know, one thing that you can kind of take away from this intro is, you know, data is not just about relational data anymore. You know, we've been working with relational data forever. You know, everyone loves SQL Server or any other kind of relational data. And when you think of database, you typically think of SQL Server. You know, one thing that I want to make clear while we're talking about all these other kinds of databases is SQL Server is not dead. Relational databases are not dead. They have their place. They are really brilliant at doing a particular piece of work. All we're going to say to you is don't try and apply the SQL Server hammer to everything that you have.
Right. And so we'll go over some different database categories. These are broad stroke categories. So of course, we'll talk about relational databases. Then there's something called a document database, and we'll clarify what each of these things means and where their place is. Yep. We'll talk about key value stores and graph databases and column family databases. And just to address the point that Ryan was making about we don't necessarily want to drive the nail with the SQL hammer, I think with all of these databases, we'll find that you could really solve any problem with any of them. They're all optimized to do different things, and we'll go over the highlights of each, what they're good for, maybe what they might not be totally optimal for.
Yeah, absolutely.
That doesn't mean you can't build something with just SQL Server or one of the other databases that we'll go over.
Yeah.
But it might not be the best tool,
if you hit any nail hard enough for long enough, you're bound to get some kind of a result.
Yep.
The result might not be the one that you want, in that the nail goes into whatever you're hammering. You may break the nail, you may break the surface that you're hammering it into, whatever the case may be. But sure, you can use a hammer for every kind of operation that you're trying to do.
Yep.
So yeah, we'll have a look at document databases. We'll have a look at key value stores, see how they're different from the other kinds. We'll take a look at graph databases. I'm really interested. Graph databases for me are fascinating. And I think, you know, when we get to the graph database module, we'll take a look at why I'm so fascinated as well by document databases and graph databases. They really, for me, solve problems that I've always struggled with. And then we'll take a look at the final one, which for me is a bit of a mystery, but luckily you're here, David. And that's this thing called the column database. I still haven't yet wrapped my head around column databases because I haven't had the opportunity to work much with them. But we'll take a look at them. So if we kind of now, so we've realized there's lots and lots and lots of data. Data looks very, very different. How do we store this data in Azure, right? I mean, Microsoft Azure provides so many different options for storing data. We're going to take a look at each of those categories of data, and we're going to say, well, how do you store that in Azure? So, you know, the biggest thing about Azure, you know, when we're talking about this kind of thing, is there's two different ways to approach most things in Azure. You've got the infrastructure as a service, where you can actually spin up a virtual machine, Windows or Linux, and you can run whatever, mostly, on those VMs you like. Right? Yep. And then you've got the Azure platform as a service. And that's where Microsoft have built some services that we deliver to our customers. So we have databases as services, we have websites, we have application services, we have a bunch of these services that our developers can use. So when it comes to data, it's no different. We've got infrastructure, VMs, and we've got platforms. And we'll take a look at both options. And then I think storing data is only one part of it, right? Because what do you do with that data? And I remember when I was back in uni, my professor, when I was studying kind of database work, was saying, you know, storing data is great, but what businesses actually want from that data is information. Most people don't really care about the data. They care about the information they can glean from that data, right? So we will take a look at how you store that data, and then we'll take a look at some of the ways that we can actually process data.
Right. Yep. And we'll really be focusing today on the storage and some general queries. And of course, there's other tools that you can use that we'll mention. We're not going to deep dive into those tools today, but it's good to know that you can use these, whether you're building your own custom software or take advantage of some of these tools.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, we're not going to spend a lot of time on processing data in Azure. So I think, you know, we'll cover it off here quickly. We'll say that these things are available. You know, we've got these ancillary data services, and these aren't necessarily about storing data. What these are about is moving data around. It's about gleaning that insight, that information from your data as it's flowing in using stream analysis. It's about doing big MapReduce jobs or real-time analytics using HD Insights and Storm. It's about how do you do full-text indexing and full-text searching using Azure Search. It's about how do you move data around using Azure Data Factory. You know, so there are a lot of options in Azure that go beyond just storing data that right. creates this end-to-end kind of picture of what you do with your data.
And those tools, while some of them are specialized for certain data stores, like I know you mentioned HD Insight, which is really a very powerful platform for doing MapReduce. There's some other tools that we talked about, like Azure Search. Azure Search can actually work with several of the database engines. It's rather database agnostic, yep. right? It's a separate service. So as we go through the different options today, just keep these processing engines in the back of your mind, that these are things that you can use.
And I know, you know, and I know not to kind of throw any of the teams under the bus, but the idea with these ancillary services is that they want to be able to connect these ancillary services to all the ways of storing data, right? So, you know, if you've got a document database filled with documents, and we'll talk about document databases later, but if you've got a document database filled with documents, one thing that you'd want to be able to do is take Azure Search, point it at that, and then say, hey, go and index this for me and do full text indexing on this. Or if you've got an Azure Data Factory and you want to move data from a relational database into a key value store database or into HBase so you can run your MapReduce job, you know, that's where you'll use Azure Data Factory.
And I think it expands even beyond that. If you want to use Azure Search across SQL, yeah. a document store, maybe the key store, you can combine.
Absolutely.
Right. So you really build a rich type of data analysis platform.
And, you know, I think what we'll do later, right at the end of the day, when we, you know, not to kind of steal our own thunder, but at the end of the day, when you see the solution that we're going to build, you know, how do you now do full text searching across that solution when you've got, you know, this all these different kind of tools in play? Yep. So, you know, in summary, you know, we've spoken a lot about some stuff. But in summary, you know, we've covered that there is data. Okay, we're not going to get away from data. I mean, David, when was the last time you built an application that didn't store or process data?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, every single application that I've built in the last, you know, 10 years stores or processes data. It does something with data. There is no way to get around data, right? And as we're seeing this Internet of Things and we're seeing this massive world that we live in of big data, we're seeing so many different kinds of data. You know, we're seeing, you know, just blobs that are coming in, large binary blobs of data. We're seeing, you know, JSON, we're seeing XML, we're seeing relational data, we're seeing, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Right, telemetry data from our devices.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yep. And, you know, we introduced the fact that, you know, in Azure, there's basically two different ways to process or to store data, right? And that's infrastructure as a service or platform as a service. And we will definitely, in every one of the categories of data that we talk about later today, we will say, well, what are the options for storing data in infrastructure as a service on Azure? What are the options for doing platform as a service? So we'll give everybody that's attending, we'll give you a flavor for what you can do in every one. We're not going to go into, you know, all the exhaustive options because it's unbelievable what you can do in Azure. So we'll just kind of highlight a few. And then, you know, we're not going to spend much time on it, but remember, storing data is only part of the picture. You know, you need to really think about what are you going to do with that data once you've stored it.
Yep. So great. That's a
so
great
summary.
So that's
the data landscape, yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you, everybody. That's the first module is a wrap. We're going to take a short break, and we will be back with the next module after that.
So I guess we're taking a 15-minute break?
Yeah, 15-minute break, and then we'll be back with the first kind of database, which I think is relational off the top of my head.
Yep.
Cool.
It's all relative.
See you soon.
Yep.